fine, fine.
All right, well, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn, and I'm here with Paul Edwards. And
hello.
I don't know, I guess I had sort of kind of been rambling about topics, and then I realized in my head, and I realized that the 4th of July is coming.
That's
so
right.
So we might as well talk about, like, comic books in America, or American comic books, or how characters that are American
absolutely
signify America.
You know, it's as you know, the Dig Comics thing is pushing, you know, it's definitely an American art form, you know. And so I thought that was a great topic to begin with, because you know, you've got you know, obviously your big American superheroes, your Captain America, you know, your formerly your Superman,
you know?
Superman, true justice in the American way, and all of that, you know. But there are a lot of lesser known, you know, sort of American superheroes, and I thought that was a great topic.
Yeah. I mean, we can definitely talk about Superman and Captain America too. I mean, God knows we've given them, or at least Superman, so much lip service, in the past, like than the like previous podcasts leading up to this one. But I guess I did want to, and it sucks that Ian's not here, because I did want to mention, you know, Man of Steel, that had some significant drops in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah,
like as
yeah.
far as like box office, and it seems to me, you know, a lot of speculation's been going around, like even in like big media outlets, as far as like, did, you know, the uncharacteristic like darkness of Man of Steel like hurt the box office? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that I feel like in a way it may have, and you know, if anything, hopefully that means they'll sort of rein that back in in the future. You know, they're smart filmmakers. I think that they're sort of listening. If anything, I thought it was really interesting that you know, the link that Corey had put up, that it was Christopher Nolan of all people who was sort of you know, more along the lines of like, you know, let's not have it, you know, let's not go that dark. I feel like maybe, you know, this is sort of, if they're smart, they know sort of where they misstepped, you know.
They know
what worked, and realized, you know, where they need to improve. I'm hoping that's the way they'll go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that it might be a little too simplistic to state that that's what hurt it at the box office, because you know, there were a lot of things that followed up the next weekend, like you had This Is the End, right? And then you had
The Heat, you know, comedies always do well during the summer.
This weekend. But what was it that came out directly the week after?
Monsters University.
Monsters U. Yeah. Monsters U I keep kind of wanting to call it Zombieland, but it's World War Z. Yeah, those were the two big follow-ups. So I think it had a lot of competition, you know, following right after. But
yeah,
I think
World War Z is the one that kicked it out of like sort of the big theater in our neck of the woods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, it didn't even last a week in the big theater, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said about the negative tone of the film and kind of the way it goes. Obviously, we talked about it ad nauseum. But it's just really interesting to see it play out, because, you know, they're calling it a hit. But what determines a hit. I mean, obviously they're committed to a sequel, but I always thought that it had to be something like it made double the domestic gross had to be double of what the box office is. Yeah, right. I mean, the
Yeah,
domestic
I don't
box
feel.
office had to be double of the domestic the budget, right?
I don't feel that that
The
necessarily is true anymore,
yeah.
especially since these things are opening worldwide now.
Yeah.
And it did really well overseas. So,
But
that's.
still, its total is well, I mean, it'll get up to like half to 500 million at some point, I'm sure. So, yeah. But I mean, it's.
They'll make their money. I feel like they sort of have nowhere to go but up. In a way,
Yeah.
there. And for me, it was definitely the thing that was missing was sort of, the heart and,
Yeah.
the characterization. And it was very plot heavy. If they can make a sequel that avoids going too plot heavy,
Yeah.
I think that, they've got a good chance there.
Cool.
But like that article that you had pointed out today. I'd rather live in the Marvel universe
Yeah,
universe than the DC
definitely.
movie universe.
Definitely. Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there was an article on Comic Book Resources today, and I can't quite see who wrote it, but they were basically saying, I think like I even said, is if there's a universe that I would want to live in, I would much more live in the, it looks like, oh, Jim McLaughlin was the writer of that article on CBR, Comic Book Resources. And it says the bleak promise of DC's cinematic universe, and basically saying what kind of what I had said, several weeks ago, which is like I don't want to live in the DC universe in the cinematic DC universe, because it just seems like such a horrifying, hopeless place to live. Whereas at least the Marvel universe stuff goes down, but there's sort of an optimistic feel to the mo to the films, and it seems like a place that the presence of superheroes would make it maybe a slightly more fun place to be in. Whereas the presence of superheroes in the cinematic DC universe kind of even makes it more depressing and scary than the world already is. You know what I mean? So, anyway, yeah, we'll see how that turns out. I mean, it's really interesting to see how a lot of the fans have kind of turned on the film in the past couple of weeks. You know what I mean? But there's the diehards who are like, it was the greatest movie ever, and I think it's fantastic. And I think that that's definitely, the Armageddon male crowd, which was like, I cried in Armageddon, it made me so sad. the
I
Michael
cried
Bay
in
movie.
Armageddon, but it was for probably different reasons.
Yeah, different reason. So, in any case, to sort of get back to our topic, I just pulled up a list on Wikipedia. Gosh knows, who would have thought? A list of United States themed superheroes. But
Awesome.
yeah, I mean, I guess we should say that, the comic book is like jazz and rock and roll, like you mentioned earlier, it is a uniquely American invention. I mean, there had been like sort of comic books before, Superman, before Action Comics number one, but they were sort of reprints of what was on the newsstand. It wasn't necessarily original material, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I think I was Action Comics really the first one, or was it the first superhero one?
Well, it wasn't the first superhero, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, Superman sort of is the prototype superhero, and there have obviously been heroes and everything before that. It's just that it sort of came together in a very unique way there.
Yeah.
And it was it's us, and it's the nice thing. I feel like that's one of the great things about America is that it was this sort of trashy, pulpy, entertainment form that actually turned into an art form.
Yeah. Yeah, over the succeeding years. It's really funny because, yeah, I mean, I think there's a bit of revisionist history these days that goes into sort of like comic book circles where it was like everyone was reading comics in the 40s and the 50s, but you know, it wasn't something that was really respected, you know,
Right.
when they were being published. I mean, it's and I don't think it was Wortham that necessarily said like, hey, these are just for kids, you know. I think that there was always a sense of it maybe being, even though adults read them, maybe sort of being not as highly respected as, say, like novels
Right.
or, you
Well,
know, or even
again,
movies.
World War II played a huge role in, the development of the comic book because it was a cheap form of entertainment that was readily portable
Yeah.
and it's smaller and lighter than a paperback, so they
Yeah.
were able to, the soldiers were able to pass them around and I think that that did play a big role in sort of the development. And then post-war, they came back and, again, I think that the cheapness of the form really can't sort of be undersold in terms of like sort of what drove its popularity.
Yeah, especially when they were sort of debuting, which is around Depression era, you know. So it was something really cheap that a little kid could buy, and you could read it and reread it over and over and over again, and you could look at the art for as long as you wanted, you know what I mean? I still think that that's something that I see in my child again, is that she will look at a comic book. And she'll just read the same one over and over and over again. She just gets so much out of it. And, you know, to have something like that, say in the 1930s, 1940s, that, you know, could continue to be a source of entertainment, you know, there was value seen in that, you know? Yeah. So.
It's similar to what kids have today with DVDs or files of movies that they watch again and again and again.
Yeah.
And kids really are the ones who do that. Kids are the ones who can, sit and watch a movie 30 times and, and it's just as good for them the 30th time as it was the first time.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm looking at Wikipedia, and you know, Wikipedia is probably not the most accurate, you know, source of information. But one of the
It's
things
on the
that
internet, man.
you have to believe in the internet. Basically, it says here that Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster's Superman in 1938 turned comic books into a major industry. So I think that, you know, it can be argued that Action Comics or Superman was probably the very first like huge thing that hit comics that made kids and people like sit up and take notice, and not only take notice, but take notice that a property could be valuable. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't realize that Superman, almost right out of the gate, you know, they were doing radio shows, they were doing movie serials, they were doing, you know, animated, you know, the Fleischer animated cartoons. Those appeared, you know, rather quickly, like right after his debut. And like you said,
Yeah,
it's.
Superman was like sort of made for, multimedia, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the same thing with and with the you had your Buck Rogers, your Flash Gordon, you
Yeah.
had, sort of many different sort of subgenres within the comic book, but again, very uniquely American.
Yeah.
And I think that we do have to a degree an even greater degree of variety and diversity in the
Sure.
medium. They're just not as popular as they were before.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons we've talked about stuff like that before,
And some
but
of the superheroes that we talk about may be part of the reason why. And some of
well,
them and then some of them are things that probably, deserve a little bit of a wider audience.
yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, starting with Superman, I mean, he is the one that started it all. And originally, I don't think he was necessarily launched as, like, say, the champion of truth, justice, in the American way. He
No,
was
he was a
sort of
little bit
like
of a
the.
sadist when he first started off.
Well, yeah, he was. I mean, he was the champion of the little guy, which is also probably what, contributed to his popularity right off the bat. I mean, here you had a guy who was stopping like wife beaters and was standing up for, what was considered the little guy. Now, he wasn't necessarily like Batman or anything. Where he was like fighting cops or, seen as sort of an outsider, which I don't even know that Batman was doing upon initial publication. It's more as during the 60s and 70s, when he got revamped a little bit, where it was like maybe he was not always friendly with the police, But Superman, his development as a symbol really happened because, like you said earlier, because of World War II. That was the big thing that, you had to sort of rally behind the flag. And here you had a guy who was not necessarily red, white, and blue, but definitely red and blue. And, what better way?
And he is white.
Yeah, well, he is Caucasian, but so was every superhero and back in those days, unfortunately.
until the until the Marvel, really started breaking those barriers,
Yeah,
later.
in the '60s.
Captain America, also a product of World War II.
Yeah, absolutely, and definitely a direct product of it. But it's interesting because I think that a lot of people think that Captain America was the first, sort of guy draped in the flag, and he actually wasn't, It
No,
was, yeah.
absolutely. The Shield came out a
Yep.
year before him.
Yeah, the Shield, he came out, and that was well, what's known as Archie Comics. I looked up the comic earlier today on Wikipedia, and man, that is some wacky origin stuff. That is some really golden age stuff. But the Shield, for people who don't know who he is, he was a guy who basically kind of wore like a red suit and had like a giant, well, what could be seen as Captain America's original shield,
Right, sort of
emblazoned
that
on his
like
chest.
chevron shape, yeah.
Yeah. And he's got like a really spotty history. He's been published and then canceled like many times over. And I think DC Comics took a shot at like reviving him recently, and that kind of doesn't seem to have gone anywhere either.
Yeah, it was
So,
J. Michael Straczynski that wrote that.
yeah, it's interesting because I remember reading he was part of a group at least in the 80s, mid to late 80s. Archie Comics kind of tried to revive him, and along with a lot of other obscure characters, one of which was a character called Thunder Bunny, which for some reason I actually enjoyed as a kid. Yeah, I actually got my hands on, a couple of Mighty Crusaders comic books, and they were really well illustrated, and I thought that they were kind of interesting, but it was the sort of thing that wasn't continually published, you know what I'm saying? It just kind of like it wasn't on the newsstand all the time, and I don't know why that is. I have, no real idea, but he's not a character that really stood the test of time in any significant way.
In the I know in the reboot they did some sort of like a what nanotech battle suit or something like
Oh,
that.
really?
It was very much a I guess a pretty solid attempt to bring it into the 21st century. But he just doesn't have quite the quite the story, and quite the personality that Captain America had.
Yeah. I don't think anyone was ever, excuse me, ever ready to really take this guy and mold him into, you know, a character that would be as interesting or compelling as, you know, other, you know, patriotically themed characters.
And, you know, one of the things when I was like doing the research on this thing too, I never realized that the SHIELD, that his name was an acronym.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a really crazy acronym.
It's like the parts of his body that, you know, that he gets his superpowers from.
Well, it says
it starts with sacrum. I mean,
it's basically, the SHIELD. It's the, what was it?
Right here. Sacrum.
The chemicals. Yeah. The chemicals that changed the parts of his anatomy that gave him his superpowers. So you've got, I'm looking at it right now. It's sacrum, heart, innervation. I don't even know what that is.
It's such a 40s thing.
Eyes, lungs, derma. And basically using chemicals and x-rays to give him super strength, which is really funny.
Super strength?
What's that?
X-rays give you super strength?
I don't know, something new. But it's very interesting because that's a very similar origin to, you know, one of my favorites, Captain America.
Very
similar
to Captain America.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because I've actually read, I don't know if you ever read it, Joe Simon's autobiography, My Life in Comics. It's put out by Titan Books like a year and a half ago. It's a really good read. And, you know, he talks about, you know, his creation of Captain America, you know, back in the day. And, you know, he makes it seem like it was just like a one-off. Like there was no big, like, him and Jack Kirby were just trying to come up with something.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't like some like manna from heaven, like Thunderbolt, like, and they were like, this will be the greatest thing ever. Like the only big inspired thing that they had was Captain America, you know, punching Hitler out on the cover of, you know, on the first issue, you know.
You know, I got to say that goes a long way though, because the SHIELD, I think one of the things that, you know, worked against him. I mean, even though, you know, Americans were beginning to feel, you know, the sort of nationalism and patriotism, they still hadn't entered the war at the time that the SHIELD appeared. And, you know, when he did appear, he was an FBI agent. You know, he was working, you know, stateside and everything. You know, Captain America was, you know, a GI. He was overseas. He was, you know, punching Hitler. And I really feel like that is something that sort of it did. It gave him that little extra something that sort of pushed him over the top into a wider audience appeal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that was sort of a really good sort of shock value tactic. I mean, if you were walking past a newsstand and you saw a dude draped in an American flag and he was punching out Hitler, that was going to get your attention, you know? And I'm sure back then, you know, Hitler was in the news all the time. Like his war machine was, you know, going across Europe and, you know, and people were probably afraid that America was going to be getting into the war. And to see something like that on the cover probably was, you know, something that made people like stand up and take notice, especially children, you know? So, I mean, but it's interesting because Captain America is another character that maybe like the SHIELD could have just as easily disappeared into obscurity, you know, that his publication, I can't remember exactly how many issues Captain America lasted, but you know, after the war ended, World War II, there wasn't really that much of a place or for him, you know.
Yeah. Well, he went away for a long time until Marvel decided to dust him off. And
actually, he came back like in the 50s, around 1953.
Really?
Yeah, they tried to revive him, and it's really funny. They tried to revive him, and it only lasted for a couple of issues. And then later on, Stan Lee and more than likely to Jack Kirby, they were working on the Avengers, had the idea of bringing him back. And, you know, with the stroke of genius kind of made him like a man out of time. So, I mean, And it's also very interesting that that 50s revival would play into a lot of Captain America's current storylines throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That would, that 50s revival would play off because, obviously you would play through, to the current era because you had fans going the anal fans, which we all kind of are, like, well, what about this Captain America in the 50s? If Captain America disappeared, and a lot of that were a lot of ways to explain that were like, well, that was not Steve Rogers, that was like a different super soldier that had taken up. So you would have stories later on where the like a super soldier would like reappear and he would think he would be Captain America and he would be crazy and Captain America would have to deal with this guy who got tested on with the super soldier serum that he was subjected to and didn't work on this other guy and drove the guy insane and had to be put in suspended animation. So Marvel had a really good way of working stuff like that out. And if not for probably Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on the Avengers, saying like, let's bring this guy back, Captain America, just like the original Human Torch, probably could have, disappeared into the dustbin of, time, right? And
yeah. And it doesn't always work, going back and revisiting the old characters really works sometimes. I think it worked with Starman. But for every Starman, you've got a fighting Yank, which is the other one of the other characters I was reading about. And I mean, he was rebooted by no less than Alan Moore.
Really? And what?
In America's Best Comics, Alan Moore
Oh.
revived Fighting Yank and made him a member of Smash, which was a superhero group in the Tom Strong books.
Oh, Tom Strong was an awesome series, but I can't quite remember the Fighting Yank. Was that like a long-lived revival? Did they? Oh,
No,
here he
no.
is.
I think he started in issue 12, was when, so he wasn't like right from the get-go.
The Fighting Yank is the name of several fictional comic book superheroes. The initial comic book character called Fighting Yank first appeared in Netter Comics'
Netter Comics, that's right.
Startling Comics number 10, September 1941. Oh, wow. During the period called the Golden Age of comic books. Yeah, he's one of these guys that's wearing sort of like a colonial Civil War
No,
themed
dude,
costume.
he's got this great backstory here because he gets his powers from it's revealed to him by the ghost of his ancestor. His ancestor, Bruce Carter the First, was a hero from the civil. I'm not the Civil War, the American War of Independence. The Revolutionary
Oh.
War. So he appears to him and shows him a magic cloak that if you wear it gives you invulnerability and superpowers. So he wears this sort of tricolored hat, an American flag on the chest. I mean, he's very, the look is sort of taken from a Revolutionary War soldier slash, but then it's, got some tights on him too,
Well,
and
that's interesting.
he's a public domain character now.
Yeah, he's a public domain character. So if you wanted to do a Fighting Yank character, you could probably do that, right?
He's one of those people that's like, I can do better than Alan Moore.
Yeah, I know, right? Go ahead, give it a shot. That's funny because as much as I love the Tom Strong books, it looks like he was part of Terra Obscura or something like that. Like, I don't know if that was like an actual sort of line of books that he did, but yeah, Tom Strong number 11 revealed that when Carol Carter had reached adulthood, she gained the same powers as her father and
Yes,
joined him in the fight against
she's
evil.
the other the fighting Yank. Although she becomes Fighting Spirit later
Oh, Fighting
because she didn't
Spirit.
want to be confused with her dad.
That's awesome. It's interesting because it looks like Timely Comics, Marvel Comics, had a character called the Fighting Yank. It looks like AC Comics had a character called the Fighting Yank in their Femforce books,
Yeah.
which brings me to another patriotically themed character, Miss Liberty, which I never read these books. Like, you would always see them, and it was really weird. They supposedly they had like this really big fan base, and you would see, I would see them on independent comic shops, but I always figured it was kind of like TNA books, but they were never really illustrated like that all the time, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Miss Victory, and I just really remember seeing her costume. Miss Victory was secretly stenographer.
Miss Victory, Joan Wayne. Miss Liberty.
Oh, Miss Victory. Oh, sorry. Miss Victory is what I've been talking about. Sorry. Did I say Miss Liberty?
Yes.
Ah, I'm always twisting things. Miss Victory is the AC Comics character. And secretly stenographer Joan Wayne. Can you beat that? Wow. Yeah, she worked in the government department. Coupled with her desire to help the war effort led her to don the patriotic guise of Miss Victory, a tight-fitting red, white, and blue costume with a plunging neckline, of course, and a V emblem across her chest. It looks like Miss Victory was also something that was directly created in the Golden Age of comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And then I guess
created by Force... unknown writer. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it looks like Femme Force revived her in 1984.
Yeah.
Yeah, her true identity was Dr. Joan Wayne, a research scientist in the United States Department of Defense, who in the 1940s developed the V-47 formula to increase strength, stamina of Allied troops. The
I'm formula sensing a pattern here.
Yeah, yeah, I know. The formula, however, only worked on Joan herself, and she became a superheroine. Seems oddly familiar. That's funny. Wow.
That's really interesting. I guess they sort of retconned her in a way because when she initially appeared, there was no origin story. It was just, you know, Miss Victory blowing stuff up and, you know, knocking down walls and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. But she was, I guess, one of the leaders of this group called Femme Force, which I've never really read. I remember maybe picking up one or two of them, but they didn't interest me enough to keep collecting them. But I know that they have some kind of fan base. It's interesting. I wonder if you can still hunt that stuff down and whether it's worth hunting down. I don't know. You know, these days you've got like scantily clad superheroines, you know, you throw a rock. So yeah. I don't know if that was just an attempt to pick up some male fan base or if they were comic books to be taken kind of sort of seriously, but I don't know if they ever exploded. It's interesting because we were talking about, you know, Captain America, the revival in the 50s, and, you know, the Captain America attempt in the 50s directly led to another superhero, patriotically themed superhero, which a lot of maybe comic fans know about, but the general public doesn't know, called the Fighting American. Which you want to talk about a crazy origin. Well, basically, the Fighting American, that's in trade too, which I found interesting because Wikipedia didn't really talk about the Fighting American's recent trade paperback collection, which again, that was put out at around the same time that Joe Simon's autobiography was. And that's by Titan Books if you want to check it out. But The Fighting American was sort of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby's reaction to Timely trying to start up Captain America again, which basically they were kind of pissed because they were like, wait a minute, you're starting up this character and you're not involving us. And so I think Joe Simon directly said, well, we decided that we were going to show them the way that it needed to be done. And I guess originally The Fighting American was sort of, in the first issue, he sort of developed as like a serious character to sort of fight like anti-communism. And according to, you know, this Wikipedia article and, you know, a little bit of Joe Simon's autobiography, they started seeing that this Red Scare thing was developing into something a bit distasteful. So instead of making the Fighting American serious all the way through, like by the second, third issue, he kind of became a bit of a parody of
Yeah.
like the patriotic superhero. But his origin was has something to do with let me see. Basically, yeah, it had something to do with a guy who was a TV news reporter and had a younger brother who was a star athlete. And then his brother is like an anti-communist, and he gets killed by one of the enemies. Maybe I'm confusing this.
It's very similar to Captain America.
Well, no, it's a bit different because basically it involves one brother getting killed
Except
and then the
the
other
brother then
brother.
comes back later as a deadly assassin.
Oh,
I
really?
guess, yeah, I believe that. Unless I'm getting it confused. Yeah, my exposure with Fighting American was from the like from the 90s. I think that for the Heroes, you remember like when Marvel did like the Heroes Reborn thing.
Yeah.
I think
Oh,
that
here it is. Yeah.
they did a run of Fighting American comics. I think it was Jeff Loeb
Oh, that's
who
right.
wrote
That
the
would have been awesome comics. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. That's it. That's it was Awesome Comics. It was Jeff
Yeah.
Loeb who wrote them. And
And they
you
changed the
know
costume.
Yeah, they did. They changed the costume and they actually made it look a little more Captain America looking.
Yeah,
You
and
know, they
Ed
gave him a
McGuinness drew those. I
shield and
remember those.
everything.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Rob Liefeld drew a lot of them, but you
No,
know, that's
Ed McGuinness drew the he drew Oh no. All
but
right. Yeah. He
he
might
drew
have
the well, he
drawn the
drew the
first.
covers anyway, you know, so you've got a
Yeah,
lot of
yeah.
like, you know, really weird anatomy and fists and
Oh, I'm
stuff
going to
like
have to
that.
look this the Ed McGuinness series up because I remember buying them and thinking that the art was really fantastic, but not really being that much into it. But at least the original Fighting American, I remember reading the first issue of this collection and thinking, I mean, it's really kind of ghoulish. It's like it's basically like this guy gets killed and they're able to bring his body back with like superpowers, and then his brother volunteers to have his brain transferred into the body of his brother with the superpowers. So like he kind of like sacrifices his life so that he can inhabit his brother's body and become a superhero. It's bizarre. It's like totally bizarre. And I remember reading it and thinking like this is one of those golden age things where it was like, what? I don't know about this, you know?
Man,
But you
Simon
know,
and Kirby were some crazy people. Like, just
yeah, they were.
I'm just I'm I it never ceases to amaze me how inventive those guys were at like the drop of a hat. Because, you know,
Yeah.
this is just one of the thousands of things that they did. And
Yeah.
you know, and if somebody else were to describe this to me, you know, I would just be, I mean, there are people who, you know, spend months and months and months trying to develop something like that. Simon and Kirby would just crank it out like that.
Yep. Yeah, I know. And but see that's really interesting because it's such a product of the time, you know what I mean? It's like you had to crank stuff out and you couldn't sit around like waiting for it to be perfect or, you know, expecting it to look like the best it was going to look. You had to crank it out. You had to do the best that you could because you had a schedule and, you know, it was a business and it was like time to get stuff out. Actually, it's really interesting to note too that the Fighting American was also rare in the fact that it was a creator-owned comic book.
Oh,
It
yeah.
wasn't owned by like a larger company. Joe Simon and Jack Kirby apparently retained ownership for, I guess, the longest time. And from what I understand, Dynamite Comics tried to revive the Fighting American, and there were some legal issues that, you know, Joe Simon was like, hey, wait a minute, I didn't have anything to do with that. And then the Kirby State estate got involved, and I guess they just Dynamite decided to drop it because it wasn't worth it. Yeah, so. Yeah, this is, I mean, this is amazing. I'm flipping through the book now and you know, if you're interested in something that's different and kind of just like whacked out in its sensibilities. I mean, this is a book to pick up, you know. I really enjoyed it when I picked it up, and I found it to be really, really fun. Another really amusing thing about The Fighting American is that his partner's name is Speed Boy, which is like, to me, it's just like, that makes absolutely no sense, because it's just, it's like, why Speed Boy? And the logo is an S with like wings on it. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
awesome.
It's totally not, except for the colors of his costume, it's not like American themed at all, you know, but that's what they went with. And, you know, it was very much, you know, Captain America and Bucky, but, yep, you know, with sort of a different take, a different twist on it. But again, Fighting American isn't something that lasted very long, you know.
It's another over at DC.
Yeah. You
know, we had, of course, All-Star Squadron.
Oh, yeah.
All-Star Squadron, you know, was a superhero team that debuted in the 80s. And, you know, you had Uncle Sam as a character there, and you had Liberty Bell.
Yeah, that's right. Good call.
Liberty Bell, you know, who would her powers actually sprang from the Liberty Bell. Originally, what would happen is she had the woman Libby Lawrence was her name.
One of those lovely
alliterative names, you know. And she had an arrangement with one of the guards at the Liberty Bell, and when she signaled him, he would ring the bell, and it would activate her her powers.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah, and she actually... it's kind of funny. She's actually had a pretty long history in the DC universe, you know. She married Johnny Quick. You know,
they're all still around.
Yeah. She's popped up in Justice Society of America. You know, she's still around. She was even in a Crisis on Infinite Earths. You know, she's firmly entrenched part of the DC universe. And I think they've got a new a new Liberty Bell now, who's the daughter of the original Liberty Bell and Johnny Quinn.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, the basic having the character of Uncle Sam as like a superhero, you know, is just sort of a brilliant idea that I don't think anyone directly might have thought of or thought was possible because of maybe trademark or copyright issues, but it seems like DC has been able to, you know, capitalize on that. So, and they keep revamping this group. Like, it seems like almost every couple of years, there's like a new All-Star Squadron or a version of the All-Star Squadron, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the original, not the original Uncle Sam, you know, but the one that in the comics, the superhero one, was created by Will Eisner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back in 1940.
Really? Wait, are you saying, you're saying that there was a superhero version of Uncle Sam and Will Eisner had like him in a comic book or?
Yeah. National Comics number one in 1940. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Originally, he was the spirit of a slain patriotic soldier from the Revolutionary War, and now whenever his country needs him, he reappears. And you see that happens again. Also, there's sort of a Uncle Sam-esque character in the Astro City, universe too.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, but I think where probably most people know Uncle Sam from in the comics is that Alex Ross illustrated.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Have you ever read that?
No, I haven't. But I mean,
it's fantastic.
Just beautiful.
Yeah, what it is, it's not Uncle Sam like in the All-Star Squadron. It sort of is, but it isn't. But it's really kind of like Alex Ross's kind of left reaction to the Iraq War and all that stuff we were going through and the freedoms that we were giving up. And it seems like it would be very like might turn some people off, but I don't think so. I see it as a very really beautiful work of art. I mean, that is a comic book that is, it's not your typical comic book. And I think maybe it might have turned some people off because they were maybe expecting some sort of, superhero action thing. And it really ended up being a commentary on the times that we live in and like basically what does America stand for these days? And it is beautifully illustrated, and sort of where he sees it going. And Alex Ross has never really, I mean, that's part of his genius. He doesn't really shy away from doing something different or what might be controversial, but he also doesn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know what I'm saying? He maintains the spirit of like the character or characters that came before him. So,
I just know that, I mean, if nothing else, you can always count on Alex Ross for, gorgeous art. But when it's something that he really, believes in, and it's something that, really is personal to him, there are very few people who can equal what he can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's something that you can find, I would recommend picking it up. Maybe if you can find it at Comic-Con this year,
Yeah, I'll definitely look for it.
You should definitely, or if I can find mine copy, I can lend it to you. It's interesting that you mentioned Liberty Bell because, and we were talking about Miss Victory before, but another sort of female, I don't know if she's directly patriotically themed, but her costume certainly is. Did you ever read Stars and Stripe?
Oh yeah, I love
The
that.
Jeff Johns thing?
Yeah, I
That was
love
a
that. That.
fantastic book, you
Yeah,
know.
she was part of that. I keep going back to Starman for this because Starman's the one that sort of revitalized sort of those golden slash silver age characters by basically introducing the fact that these people are old enough to have kids who are living with the legacy of their parents and things like that. And yeah, she actually Courtney, the who is the she's the stars part of that, then goes on to become the she's the current incarnation of Starman,
Oh, I didn't know that that had happened.
Yeah,
Really?
that passed along to her through when Jack Knight, the Starman of the book, gave it up to raise his family. He basically gives up being a superhero to raise his kid, and he passes it on to her.
Well, I know that, what her origin is in the book is basically, she got the original cosmic converter belt, in her stepdad's belongings. And then she kind of was a little bit of a brat in the first issue of Stars and Stripe, which I believe is collected in trade at this point. And if you're a comic fan and you like something fun that's not corny, that's very sort of reminded me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer a little
Very
bit.
much so, yes.
And basically she dons the belt to kind of annoy her stepdad, who used to be one of the original
Justice Society, right?
Justice Society. And his robot is called Stripe. So and that was the whatever acronym for the robot, which I can't seem to find what Stripe stood for right now. But and following in the footsteps of the legacy of another old character from DC Comics, the Star Spangled Kid. Basically Stars and Stripes, she was the Star Spangled Kid. But you're saying like after that, now she's become what, Star Woman or Star Girl?
Yeah, I don't know what I don't know if that's what her official title is, but basically Jack Knight passed on the cosmic rod things to her. Yeah, it's it, what I really love about both of those series, especially Stars and Stripe, is the idea of, you know, someone who sort of gets into being a superhero for the fun part of it.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, it's sort of, she did it to annoy her dad. But it's a way of, like, you know, having kicks, and it's really fun. It's exciting. But then, you know, they gradually learn the responsibility that goes along with it. And what's great about her, and the and points out the difference between Courtney and Jack Knight, is Jack Knight, you know, realizes that, you know, she's the kind of person who can accept that responsibility and, you know, and grow with it and strive with it. And he's the kind of person who's spent his entire life completely avoiding that kind of responsibility. You know, that those are Starman marked, you know, the beginning of, like, sort of a new, for me, like a new era of DC comics that, you know, was able to reach back and pay homage to what had come before,
yeah,
without, you know, needing to trash it all and reboot it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sort of the thing that disappoints me every time there's sort of a big event, is that there's this tendency to, you know, just, you know, tear it all down so that you can build it up again.
Yeah.
Rather than continue to build on what's already come before, because, you know, the history of DC becomes a beautiful thing in those books. And I really respect, you know, Jeff Johns and, you know, James Robinson and the people who really took that and, you know, furthered it. They built on it rather than, you know, feeling the need to reboot.
Yeah, it's really interesting because DC has such a beautiful and, you know, long legacy of characters, and it's just at some point they just seem to see it as a detriment. And what the JSA, which was so great, and, you know, characters like Courtney Whitmore, you know, it does say here that she did take on Stargirl, and I believe she did that in the JSA run, which is weird, mm-hmm. because I collected the JSA avidly. That was like one of the last superhero books that I was like really hardcore into. And I'm surprised that I don't remember that happened. But, you know, they see it as a detriment instead of something. What DC was really good at was building legacy heroes, meaning mm-hmm. like heroes that came after the original, you know.
Yeah.
And they even would try that sometimes, like with Batman. They did it with Green Lantern a lot. They did it with The Flash. And then at some point, you know, I mean, you mentioned Jeff Johns, you know, as much as I respect and really love his writing to a certain extent, it's almost like his fault that they've kind of like reverted back, because he brought back, you know, Hal Jordan and brought back, you know, Barry Allen and mm-hmm. all that stuff. When for years and years and years, there had been other characters who had taken up the mantle, and I think taken it up really well, like done a really good job. I mean, yeah. I remember really liking Kyle Rayner, and I remember really liking, you know, Barry Allen, you know, yeah. the new Flash.
Absolutely. Barry Allen, one of the things I loved about him was, you know, the fact that he's one of the first superheroes who had no secret identity. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like everybody knew. It's like, yeah, that's Barry Allen. He's the Flash. That's yeah. his job.
Wait, what did I call the original Flash? Did I call him Barry Allen? Oh, gosh. My head must be... What was the original Flash?
The original one was... oh, my God.
I can't believe it. I'm blanking out on the Flash's original name. Well, that's how much I didn't care about him. No, not the dude with the helmet. Oh, no. I'm looking it up right now. Jay Garrick? Oh, Jay Barry Garrick. Allen. No, Garrick. Wally West was
Wally
the second guy.
Wally West, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we totally messed that up. Yeah, I was right. Barry Allen was the first, and then Wally West came second.
We'll fix it in the edit.
No, I'm gonna leave it there.
Okay,
we're fine. In perfect here at Part Time.
Well, you know what? Let's go to another DC Comics universe who, not really a superhero, but definitely all American. Sergeant Frank Rock. Sergeant Rock.
Sergeant Rock, yeah. I never read Sergeant Rock. I guess I wasn't into military comics. Were you big into Sergeant Rock?
You know, in Hawaii, I had, at least when I first moved to Hawaii, in terms of like comic books, you kind of got whatever you could in terms of comic books and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And I was lucky enough that one of the guys in our church, you know, had just, you know, he had saved all of his stuff from when he was a kid, and you know, he just he gave it to a bunch of us kids, you know, who love to read comics, you know, so he just had these boxes of stuff that he gave to us, and you know, so yeah, you know, I got to read a lot of Sergeant Rock, and I got to read you know, he had some of the, you know, like the Charlton comics, and you know, some of these sort of like off company things, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, Sergeant Rock was a really good really good book. And what I liked about Sergeant Rock was that you know, he's just like sort of a no nonsense, you know, group. And you know, you had Easy Company, so you had like sort of these like you know, these group of guys around him who, you know, were always sent on these sort of impossible missions and things like that. You know, when I was a kid, I was a fan of movies, you know, like of like, you know, war movies like Papillon and you know, things like that, where it's like, you know, you got the guys on a mission kind of things, you know, Guns of Navarone and things like that. So for me, yep, that's what appealed to me about Sergeant Rock.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I never really was really hardcore into like military comics when I was a kid. I was much more, you know, I was just superheroes all the way. So I never really picked up Sergeant Rock. But I mean, I know that he's got like a really huge following. A lot of people like him, and they keep saying that they're going to develop a film out of him. And I remember one of the worst rumors that I heard was that Schwarzenegger was going to play Sergeant Rock.
Yeah,
and I was like, how are you going to pull that off? Like,
yeah, it's not going to happen now. But you know, one of the great things about Sergeant Rock too was you had you know, Joe Kubert as the artist on most of those.
Yeah. You
know, like they had a look that was completely different than, you know, sort of anything out there.
And yeah,
it was just an amazing story tag, a story tell number. And the writer, the guy who created him, Robert Kaniger, I believe, was a former, you know, he served too, you know, so like it just felt authentic, even though it was a comic book. It just felt real, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I think these a lot of these are collected, so I'm going to have to check them out at some point. Yeah, I mean, especially if... Yeah, and the thing about Kubert's artwork, I mean, it's just so always so dynamic. You know what I mean? It's definitely... It's interesting because a lot of the Image Comics creators, the early guys, they get all this credit for being like... For like making comics, you know... you know, like, oh my gosh, the page layout is so fantastic and all the line work and blah blah blah. But I would argue that Kubert was probably one of the first people to really play with things, along with probably Steranko and stuff like that, to make things like really interesting. So it would probably be very interesting for me to go back and look at a lot of that Sergeant Rock work and see how he played with stuff. Yeah, oh, that's really cool. I have to check that out. It's interesting, you know, we were talking about Courtney Whitmore, Star Spangled Kid, but it's funny, I'm reading this article and this is something that I forgot. I guess, you know, the character Courtney was based on Geoff Johns' sister who died in an airplane crash. Yeah. But it's funny, apparently Geoff Johns was a big fan of Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew, and wanted Courtney's superhero outfit to be modeled after one of the Captain Carrot characters, which is another patriotic superheroine, Yankee Poodle.
Oh, Yankee Poodle. That's great.
Yeah, Yankee Poodle.
And we get to get our obligatory Scott Shaw shout out here.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. I mean, yeah, and it's funny because, again, reading those comics... like the Captain Carrot, I never really sensed that Yankee Poodle was like like sort of like Captain America or Superman was a character that, you know, wore her patriotism on her sleeve. I mean, she's actually, I always thought she was a really funny character because she was based on sort of like Rona Barrett. You know, she
Yeah,
was
yeah.
like a gossip column journalist, you know, in her secret identity. But I always really liked her superpowers. Like, you know, she had the stars shooting out of her left hand and the stripes, like the blue stars would shoot out of her right hand, sorry, and the stripes, which the red and white stripes would shoot out of her left hand, and like one of them could repel objects and one of them could attract objects, you know. And I always thought that that was like a really cute character, and you know, I definitely think we should mention her because I always
Absolutely.
thought her costume was really fun, and she was a cute character. So, I mean, in the pantheon of patriotically themed superheroes, how could you not mention something like Yankee Poodle? I mean, come
Absolutely.
on.
And I'm going to go back to Sergeant Rock because a character that appeared in Sergeant Rock and ended up in his own series of comics and still, pops up every now and again, the Unknown Soldier.
Oh, yeah.
The Unknown Soldier was in a Sergeant Rock story. I think it was I'm looking at here. It says Our Army at War number 168. I think I read that in a reprint later on. The Unknown Soldier is sort of the, I guess I would just sort of describe him in a way as the like spiritual and physical precursor to Darkman. He's a soldier, an intelligence agent who's been in some sort of a horrible war injury, whose his head and his face is just so disfigured that he always keeps it completely wrapped up in these bandages. So, he wear a uniform, but his face is always bandaged up. However, he's just this amazing, like, master of disguise, and he can infiltrate like sort of any group and assume identities. And so they're sort of more sort of spy stories than war stories in a way.
Yeah.
And just a really eerie character because you don't like sort of know what his agenda is in a way, and he just one of the few like superheroes I remember who just like had like a really horrible like temper. Like he was just so like disgusted with war and with the enemy. He would just lose it, like seriously lose it. And he would sort of blow his cover sometimes, just because he just couldn't control himself. They revisited him a couple of different books. They did one in Garth Ennis did a mini series,
Oh, did he?
a Vertigo mini series that was sort of about a CIA agent who's tracking what happened to the soldier after the war. Really sort of dark. Of course, it's a very for a Garth Ennis story, it's very straightforward. It's not very jokey, and it goes pretty black. It's a good book if you get the chance to read that.
I'll have to check that out.
And then they tried to reboot it in 2008, 2009, and this was set in Uganda. You had a yeah. You had a reboot of it that moves it to Africa and like the had the in Uganda you had the sort of the genocide that was going on there with the Lord's Resistance Army, and you've got a doctor who sort of gets he gets caught between these forces. He's just horribly disfigured, and he assumes the identity of the unknown soldier.
Oh wow, that's interesting. It's funny because, you know, we're talking a little bit about the Unknown Soldier and stuff like that, and I just kind of realized, you know, thinking about Captain America, that the storylines that are the most interesting with, say, Captain America are the ones that sort of explore the depths of his patriotism and mm-hmm. how far he's willing to go, you know, in service of a government or in service of the American ideal. And, you know, one of the characters that sticks out as far as like almost the antithesis to Captain America is the U.S. agent, you know, which is what he's called now. But if you go back and you look at like some of those like mid-80s Captain America stories written by Mark Gruenwald, you know, that is probably, in my opinion, some of the best Captain America stories that you're ever going to read, because it has to deal with the fact that, you know, at one point in Captain America's history, and this wasn't necessarily the first time that he questioned himself, but it was one of the first time that the American government came to him and said, look, we're the ones that kind of created you. We're the ones that gave you the Captain America costume. We gave you the shield. So now we've decided to, you know, call in our marker. Mm-hmm. And basically you work for us or you have to give up the Captain America identity. And what ends up happening is that Captain America decides, like, well, I can't just commit myself to one administration. I serve the American ideal. So he returns the costume and the shield and takes on the identity of, well, he starts calling himself just the Captain, and he wears sort of a black costume after that. And what they end up giving the costume to this other guy, John Walker, who was calling himself Super Patriot at the time. And he was a little bit of a tough guy. He had been given some sort of soldier serum, or I think he was like, oh, that's what it was. He was part of like some weird like superhero wrestling league where they all had like sort of, they had sort of been manipulated and turned into sort of like super soldiers so that they could, you know, wrestle in this superhero wrestling league. But what ends up happening is that, you know, this guy John Walker, he can't keep his stuff together, and a group, I believe it was, they were called the Watchdogs, they figure out who he is. And they kidnap his parents, and he tries to rescue them. And in the course of events, what ends up happening is his parents get killed in some gun crossfire, and the parents die. And he just loses it, and he ends up massacring like all these like something that massacring these terrorists that held his parents hostage. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, like he just snaps, and he takes the Captain America identity a little further than what comic fans, you know, he almost becomes like the Punisher in a Captain America costume. And it's just a really fantastic storyline that develops in a really great way. And I'm just reminded of it because it's one of these things that happened to Captain America when I was growing up. And it was such great writing that I just remember being blown away as a kid. And I tracked down that whole run on eBay like a long time ago, mm-hmm. and I have them all. And to a certain extent, I mean, obviously there was a different way of writing comics. The power of it all really holds up. And especially that one issue where John Walker kind of like has to deal with the fact like, oh wow, these people aren't playing games. And I can't be irresponsible. But by the time he learns that, it's too late. And, you know, he's off to, like, the loony bin a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And becomes...
I remember his costume, right? He had the black costume with, like, the flag across the chest. And
which is actually what Captain America sort of took on when he lost the costume.
Yeah.
So, obviously, eventually Steve Rogers gets the Captain America identity back. And then that's when, you know, John Walker becomes a U.S. agent, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it may sound a little convoluted the way I'm explaining it, but it was a fantastic storyline. And I don't even think that they've ever collected that, like, in a trade or an omnibus or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's definitely something worth hunting down. And I can't remember the exact issues, but I believe it's in sort of like the late 300s. Anywhere between 350 and 400, You know what I mean? But it just strikes me that some of the more interesting storylines of a patriotic character are the ones where they have to look at like the reality of their government and the reality of what they stand for, you know? Another really great Captain America storyline was a single issue that John Byrne did, you know, that he illustrated, and I think maybe Roger Stern may have written it, but where Captain America has, they ask him to run for president. And it's a real, and you just wonder how that whole thing is going to play out. And in the end, what ends up happening is it's this really great piece of writing where Captain America says, like, I would love to run for president. I would love to be able to, I believe that I'm here to help America, but I don't stand for one party or one administration. Again, I stand for the American dream. And he's like, I can't run the risk of damaging the American dream by getting involved in politics or running for president. And it's just like really like, oh, it's such a good way of playing that out. You know what I mean? So some really interesting storylines that people should track down, especially if they're interested in Captain America. So I don't know. 4th of July is coming. Any more other patriotic characters or American comics that you've got off the top of your head since we're
Dude,
reaching?
there have been so many of them,
I know.
and it's really interesting. And once you, and it's funny because once I started researching this, you know, I would, you know, run across this, you know, this one that was inspired by this one, you know,
Yeah.
you know, they all kind of do go back there to, you know, Captain America. He's sort of like the prototypical American superhero.
Yeah.
But I'm just again really impressed by sort of the richness of, you know, if you think about it, that's a pretty narrow genre. You know, superheroes that represent America, you know. It
Yeah.
seems like, you know, there just wouldn't be this many, like you wouldn't have that many things to choose from. But, you know, there are, you know, literally hundreds of these kinds of characters out there. It's just an amazing testament to, you know, the people's creativity, and, you know, and to the fact that, again, that this is an artwork that is a uniquely American kind of work, and celebrate, and it was used to celebrate and examine, you know, what it takes to be an American.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, like you said, it says a lot about, because you don't see like Captain France or like maybe there's Captain Canuck from Canada or, but there's, you know, there is Captain Britain, but it's basically, you know, published by an American comic book company, you know. So, I mean, it really is a testament to the ideals upon which our country, what our country was based on, you know what I mean? That there would be so many attempts at being like, I'm going to make a character that stands for this or attempts to stand for it. And the fact that how much the colors of our flag and that particular arrangement of colors stands for so much, you know what I mean? And it's just fantastic. I mean, it's and like you said, it's pretty amazing how a characters like that are just so prevalent in a uniquely American art form. It's great stuff. So, and God knows that that list, I mean, there's a list on Wikipedia of like all of them, and there's going to be more, you know? It's just going to keep going and going and going. For me, you know, my favorite is Superman, followed by Captain America. And those, you know, are quite honestly two of my favorite superheroes of all time. So, you know, it says a lot. So I think that hopefully they're going to be around for a long time. And, you know, I mean, what else can you say about?
I just hope that people, you know, continue to use them in ways that are not just entertaining, you know, because entertainment's always good, but, you know, that they do use them to reveal more, not just about the characters, but about the country, you know, because I think ultimately, and I know that that's what bothered a lot of people about Superman, going back to that, ultimately, what those characters are says something about us.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and, you know, I think that what ultimately sort of, you know, bothers people about the Superman thing is that they don't really know who he is at the end of that movie. You know, yeah. You know, we get the impression, you know, of what he could be. And I think we all have a great picture in our mind of, you know, what we want him to be and what he could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we definitely want people to tell stories, you know, where Captain America and Superman sort of, you know, inspire us to be, you know, better than what we are now.
Exactly. Well, and it's interesting. All you have to look at is that recent Captain America movie, man. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, well, it was set in World War II, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was a different time. But, you know, even in the Avengers movie, it's like, you know, Agent Coulson says, like, we could use a little old-fashioned, you know, with, like, everything that's going on. And those things are not going to die away. It doesn't matter what anyone thinks or how cynical, you know, I may get about politics or you know, how whatever banks are trying to screw the American economy over. Those ideals, you know, truth, justice, the American way. I mean, you can even say that they started chipping away with Superman on that, with Superman Returns, where, mm-hmm. you know, there's that specific line, does he still stand for truth, justice, and whatever else? And it's like they just threw that away. And I remember sitting in that movie theater just being shocked that they just kind of like tossed that. And I was like, what? You know, one of the many things wrong with that film. But, you know, it's just it. And then it also hurts me that DC Comics, you know, a little while ago, you know, had an actual comic where Superman like renounced his American citizenship, you know, in the middle of Iran or something, or whatever stands for Iran in the DC universe. And I'm like, you can't do that. I mean, yes, Superman's for the world and he's a citizen of Earth. But at the same time, you can't just throw away that he's an American invention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that was sort of nice to see in this movie that they did sort of at least go back to that, you know, where, you know, at the end of the movie, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm like, I grew up in Kansas, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, it's nice that, you know, some of that feeling is, you know, sort of you know, creeping back.
You can't get away from it with that character. You just can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of him, and that's the beauty of Captain America, is that when people look at, and it's really interesting because, you know, when they released Captain America overseas, they took out the Captain America, but that movie actually did better overseas than it did in the U.S. financially. Mm. So what does that say? I mean, it says a lot. It's like you don't strip, despite what's going on in the world, despite, you know, everything that's happening, I still believe that overseas, like, people look at us, you know, and they look at the Declaration of Independence, they look at the Bill of Rights, they look at the Constitution, and they're like, this is something that stands for something. So, you know, it's great that the comic book hero is something that will hopefully exemplify that and not want to tear it down too much, because if you wrap something in the American flag, you better be ready to back that character up, you know, with the ideals that it was founded upon, right?
I agree.
Anyway, God bless America.
And I hope everybody has a great 4th.
4th of July. Woo! Thanks for listening to Part-Time Fanboy. I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm not doing part-time.